For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Roadshow Thursday from Newport, Rhode Island, last roadshow of this fifth roadshow season, and it is time for the Red Sox front office report. It's brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, official supermarket of the Red Sox radio network, by findmassmoney.gov, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. And it is the president of the Boston Red Sox, Sam Kennedy, who joins us this morning. Hey, Sam.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How you doing?
Well, it's been a rough 48 hours, but we had a good homestand before that, so we're just grinding through, Greg.
Yeah. I wanted to ask a little bit about what's going on with what went on with Wilson Contreras and the team's perspective, where the league is at with what happened the other night and what was said to him, and do you guys feel like that was a racist statement that was made toward Wilson?
Yeah, look, I mean, Wilson is an incredibly emotional player, and there was some taunting that happened. And look, I don't want to wade into what Cade Cavalli's intention was or wasn't. I saw the apology and the position that was taken by their organization. Obviously, does not excuse Wilson's behavior. So, I think it's best to recognize that these things happen in our game from time to time, and we move on. It came in the wake of, you know, what's been a hugely emotional time for a lot of our players, given what's happening in Venezuela. So. Look, it's unfortunate, but we're going to move on.
I think maybe five times this season the benches have cleared for this baseball team and their opponent. And, four of those times he was kind of at the forefront of that. Are you guys – is that something that you're talking to him about? Super passionate, having a great season, but you want him to be able to play and not to be sitting on the bench suspended.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Wilson is a very emotional player. He's an elite player. He's a great leader in that clubhouse. He cares as much as anybody on the field. And as you said, we need him on the field. So, yeah, that is something that the group's talking about. I know Brez spent about six innings with him post-ejection. Chad Tracy's been great supporting him. And he's Wilson's appreciated that. So, got to keep all our guys on the field, and it's really important. But we do love the fact that the grind and the care for his teammates is there. We just got to channel it the right way.
Sam, before that interaction between those two players, there were reports about Jarren Duran. I saw one report about Sadon Rafaela possibly having fans removed from Fenway Park over, not necessarily Red Sox fans, but over heckling, for lack of a better word. Is that something that is happening that you are aware of in Fenway? And where do you see the line drawn in terms of the heckling that goes on at professional games and something that's actually inappropriate and warrants being tossed from Fenway Park?
Yeah, I mean, look, 99.9% of our fans come to Fenway, have a great time, cheer, boo, scream, yell, do whatever they want to enjoy the game. The one thing is we do take action when people cross the line, and in rare instances that happens and security gets involved. And this was an incident where security needed to get involved given what was happening, and that was led by Chad Tracy, who thought that was the best thing at the time, and it was, so we took action. But again, 99.9% of the time, our fans are incredibly supportive and well-behaved, and we appreciate that.
Do you know what was said to Jarren Duran that crossed the line? Does the team know that?
No, I don't know. I know there was some he said, she said. Oh, let's leave it at that. Doesn't do us any good to go into that.
I guess, though, like, obviously, nobody wants anybody to be offensive at a ballpark and screaming and negatively impacting those around them watching the game. We all agree on that. But, like, it feels to me that there has been several instances where Jaron Duran has been antagonizing fans, where it's at best, it's 50-50.
I don't think that's fair. I think there's been instances where at times the line gets crossed, and you know, that's on our operation to monitor that, and that's what we did in this case.
I guess I would just say, though, like, isn't the player has a higher threshold of responsibility than the paying customer? Would you agree?
Well, yeah, certainly paying customers have the right to express their feelings and their own emotions. It's what's great about professional sports. But when a line gets crossed, it's on us to take action.
I love having you have the opportunity to clear things up from the organization's perspective. So there was some reporting about Marcelo Meyer and the organization being frustrated with him. Can you clear that up when it comes to that player?
Yeah, Marcelo, I mean, I saw the reporting. I can assure you that none of those sentiments came from anyone inside the organization. The feeling about Marcelo is as strong as ever. I mean, he said himself, you know, he wishes he were out there, and you know, the decision was sort of taken out of his hand by our medical group. This is a tough kid. This is a great, talented young player who's transitioning into the big leagues, and we support Marcelo fully.
Sam, we talked to you several weeks back about, you know, the direction of the organization, maybe having to pivot. You have a really good series against the Yankees where you sweep them. Then it looks like you could potentially do that against the Nationals. In the last couple of games, you've gone in the wrong direction. Where do you see you guys going when it comes to trade deadline, whether buying, selling? Do you feel like you're still the jury's out on the direction that you might want to go in with this team?
Yeah, I mean, consistent with you know, where we were at a couple weeks ago, incredibly frustrated where we're at, 37-48, you know, at the beginning of July. And so it's still unclear. I mean, to your point, we had a great stretch here where we really sort of showed what we're capable of. I mean, the starting pitching has been unbelievable. And the team started to demonstrate what we sort of thought we were going to get all year. That said, we are where we are. So we've got an incredibly huge couple weeks ahead, heading out to Anaheim and then Chicago and then in New York before the break. We got to go out and win series and try to win every single night and get back in this thing. It's not out of reach entirely, but as you said, the trade deadline's coming beginning of August, and so we'll get more information as we go through the month of July, and hope that we're in a much, much better position than where we are right now.
Sam, we had Craig on last week, and he discussed sort of the process by which you guys come to the understanding of your approach at the deadline by saying that he gives a recommendation to you, Mike Gordon, John Henry, Theo Epstein. Could you sort of bring us into that? Like, how is that? Is that sort of a presentation by him? Is it everybody speaks? John makes the final decision? How does it work when you guys are making, which is going to be, you know, a pretty massive decision regarding the future of the organization as to how you guys treat this deadline?
Yeah. Well, I think you just said it really well. Like, we all talk every single day, multiple times a day. So there's not a need for a kind of a formal presentation. We all know exactly where we are. So it will be just a continuation of that dialogue that is ongoing. And that is the group, you know, John Henry and Tom Werner, Mike Gordon, Theo Epstein, myself, Craig and his team will get together and discuss exactly where we are. And we are committed to doing what's in the best interest of the Red Sox. And right now, we're hoping that it's either a very, very difficult decision or an obvious decision to add. That's where we are on July 2nd. But we got to start winning games, and winning games really soon.
There was some reporting, another opportunity to clear it up, some reporting about the scouting department being depleted. What, how is that accurate, and how many does the team actually currently have?
We've got a couple hundred people that work in baseball operations. I can tell you the department is not depleted. Scouting, analytics, medical, pro scouting, amateur scouting. So, no, the department and pro scouting, amateur scouting, not depleted at all. There has been change over the last couple of years. That's natural. So there's been some departures. There's been some restructuring, but definitely not depleted.
Okay.
Sam, I know that the, you know, All-Star break's almost upon us, and I talked to Bresbaugh last week, and one of the things that I said to him we used to do in the NFL is we used to evaluate and we'd get grades, and I asked him what he felt his grade was on himself. I'd like to know from your perspective, especially ownership, if he is secure in where he is in the future of this team and what you guys would give him as a grade and what he's been able to do heading into this season and this season when it comes to personnel.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, Wiggy. If you look back, I mean, baseball is really enjoyed day to day, right? We're living and dying with every single game. But if you zoom out and look back at what Craig was brought in here to do, a lot of the work is ongoing. He has dramatically overhauled our pitching. We've seen incredible success there. We've improved our defense, which has been an issue. We've struggled on the offensive side of the ball. We kept coming off a playoff appearance last year. I think has really set up the expectations for this year. That's why it's been so frustrating and disappointing to be 11 games under 500. But I look back at our off season. I look at the addition of Wilson Contreras, Ranger Suarez, Sonny Gray, has been one of the best pitchers in baseball, extending Chapman, making the deal to bring in Caleb Durbin. I know he got off to a slow start, but he's been incredible the past month. So the off-season acquisitions and moves were positive. That hasn't been our issue. Our issue has been underperformance in other areas. So look, the team is a work in progress. Brez would be the first to admit that we're not where we need to be. So I'm not going to grade each other, colleagues and employees out here publicly, but I think it's important to look at what's gone right and what's gone wrong and then have an honest assessment about how we fix things as we go forward.
Before you go, I'll ask you what question about what everybody's been talking about this morning. What do you think of the Jaylen Brown trade?
Oh. I mean, listen, we have enough of our own problems. I am a big, big, big Brad Stevens fan, and Brad we trust. And this guy has a track record, and I'm pulling for him no matter what they do.
And just right. A quick one, because there was reporting out there this week. I don't know how serious the reporting was, but would you rule out a return of Alex Cora in some capacity with the organization?
I saw that. Look, it's not something that we're discussing, but listen, there are lots of great feelings for Alex from people in the organization, so I could understand why there may be speculation about that. There's great feelings towards lots of people who have been here over the last couple of decades. So nothing to that, but I understand, you know, where it may come from, given the close relationships that Alex has with a lot of people in the organization.
Have you spoken to him or texted with him since Baltimore?
Been in touch. Been in touch with a lot of the guys, and you know, you can't have decades long relationships with people, and when you make changes, just, you know, cut them off. I mean, this game's about relationships, and so yes.
Okay. All right, Sam Kennedy. Right. Have a great fourth. We thank you for taking the time this morning. That is Sam Kennedy, the president of the Boston Red Sox. Everybody, Sam, you got a good. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, guys. Happy
All
fourth,
right.
everybody.
All right, happy fourth. You know, you people. It's America. It's the 4th of July. Can you not be nice to the man once?
That's freedom of speech.
It is freedom. Yes, well, freedom
first
of speech.
Amendment.
As a
first,
nailed it.
That's the first one.
I'm a two-way guy.
Can I tell you, first. Brilliant move by Greg, that with Breslow, you begin it that way because it's like whatever. With Kennedy, you end it.
Yeah, of course.
You know, give the opportunity so you get all the questions out of the way.
All right. That's the Red Sox front office report.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Meola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard the Philly reach out to LeBron, right?
Not only that, breaking news from Shams, they have just signed Anthony Simons, the Sixers, to a two-year, $12.3 million deal with a player option. So, can you imagine if they do get Bron?
I mean, they've reached out to him, and apparently it's being reported by Shams and everything, is that this is a potential spot for LeBron James.
The general manager has been there for 2 weeks, been there for a couple of calls. They just fired Daryl Morey.
This move could get him GM of the year. Have you seen all the reviews of this trade? It's like 76ers, A+, and they had to invent a letter for what the Celtics got. It was so bad.
No more the process. Trust the process in Philly, huh?
You know what? Okay. So
Tom Haberstroh gave it an F.
Real quick.
So did Ted.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, he's going to be on with us at 4. I think that article is fascinating about why Jaylen Brown really isn't any good, which, I have eyes, and I watched the playoffs 2 years ago, so I would have to disagree. But real quick before we get the calls, let's go ahead and get to Darren real quick. Darren on line one. Darren, what's up, my man? How you doing?
Good. Thank you for taking my call. This is I haven't got through it yet, and I'm trying to comprehend it. I don't think Brad Stevens is this stupid. I just don't think he's this stupid. I think the ownership is forcing his hand because they have to borrow so much money against this purchase of this team that they got to get their payroll down. And when George is done with his contract, it'll be a critical time of borrowing money. So the ownership is just forcing their hand of reducing salary, not give a shit about winning.
Nick, whoa.
That's all right. Not really.
That's all right. Go ahead. Just watch the swearing.
And then it's sad because they just wasted two generational players, homegrown talent. Now Jason doesn't have a team around him. And then he'll be gone before we even see a draft pick if it ever works out. What a pathetic way to end an organization. Red Outback must be churning in his grave.
Darren, it's bad. It is bad. And you know what's wild, too, about it, too, is that meanwhile, you talked about adding a team around him. New Celtic Mitchell Robinson apparently doesn't want to be here. Nice.
What? Really?
Yeah. So on Instagram, OG Anunoby posted a crying emoji under a report that Mitchell was traded, and Mitchell responded, quote, "I tried, brother. I didn't want this to happen. Hopefully the truth comes out at some point."
Wow. Well, he signed the deal. I mean, he wasn't traded. He had to agree to come here.
But I think that he was probably informed, we ain't going to pay for it.
Correct.
And he ended up putting in there, and this is real, "I tried, brother. I didn't want this to happen. Hopefully the truth comes out at some point."
Well, that doesn't mean it doesn't want to be here. I think that means the Knicks lowball. I mean, if he had his druthers, he would be back in New York, but they offered him nothing. That's fine.
No, he is a person who is going to be upset that he's not with his old team. He has to come here because obviously they didn't want him. But this leads me to an observation. So Mitchell Robinson gets traded, and his teammates are all posting about how sad they are that he's gone. So this all happened.
He's the longest tenured Nick on the team.
Oh, wow. Was he really?
Yeah, 8 years. Yeah.
Wow. Well, so all of his teammates are like, we're posting stuff on his Instagram and, hey, man, we're going to miss you. A lot of them put little tributes and things up there. So that leads me to an observation. Where's Jason Tatum with that right now? They're staying out of all the drama of the last 2 months with Jaylen Brown. And then there's your teammate of 10 years just got traded, and we're not hearing anything?
Not a meme? Nothing?
Not one Denzel Washington 3-second clip? Not one comment under a post?
And don't, an emoji, something.
And don't tell me that this is because it has to be official next week. No. All of Mitchell Robinson's guys, they're all over him. And that happened earlier in the day. Like, they're all like, hey, we miss you. This is going to be the worst. There hadn't been anything from Jason Tatum.
We did post him and Deuce hooping in Vegas.
And he's we know he's alive and kicking because he also congratulated, I think, Harper on his new contract, right? So
did he really?
Yes, support, yeah. Yeah. Did, my boy.
When were these things posted?
Last night, within the past 24 hours, on his Instagram stories.
He's been posting since Jaylen Brown got traded, and nothing about Jaylen Brown.
I texted you guys last night.
And dude, I was getting
I really meant it for Ken. I take back every time that I push back on the there's no beef.
It's always worse than you think. Yep. It is always worse. Mm-hmm.
That is shocking to me, because at least you would put up the face, even if you didn't get along. Like, I mean, you went through a lot together. You won a championship together. Even if you didn't, there's still that, hey, man, you know, we're going to miss you. We love you.
I know, bro, but it's not that long ago that JB was sitting there saying it was his favorite year either.
I know.
Favorite season
that
ever.
That must have burned,
I mean,
man.
You know, I mean.
Stiz, do you have that Forsberg audio? Because for him to say this last night on Boston Sports Tonight, this is now, I'm assuming Forsberg is briefed on this. And for him to leak this out about Tatum and how he feels about the new guy coming in, Paul George. I hope this is just speculation, but here's what Forsberg had to say.
It would be atypical of what Tatum has done in the past, and would be out of character for him to voice it. He's typically stayed out of those, or at least publicly, whether it's come out in support or come out against. He's just never been that type of guy. I do think his voice carries some weight. I would say, like, Paul George is one of his favorite players. He's repeatedly said that he, like, idolized him growing up. And so I think he's probably going to be pretty energized to play with him.
Oh, my God.
JT's got some power, doesn't he? He called the shots behind the scenes.
That's a blockbuster. He wanted Paul George. Mm-hmm. He might have asked them to trade for Paul George.
He wanted Joe Mazzulla. You know, JT's, this is his team, baby.
It definitely is now. There's no hiding. I mean, you better be good. I mean, there's no one to hide behind anymore.
He idolized him growing up, so he said, do you think they had like five offers on the table, all bad, and Tatum was like, I'll play with Paul George?
Do we think Paul George is one of the adults in the room, though?
No.
Nope. He's an adult, yeah.
He's an adult, but I don't geriatric. Think.
He might be old, but does he bring a level of professionalism that you think maybe was lacking prior?
Well, maybe. He got popped for PEDs for 25 days.
Okay, he's doing whatever he has to do to play.
No, he is he's a podcaster. He's like one of these guys that wants to be famous, whereas Mike Conley Jr. is an adult in the room. Like, that was a move that they made. I'm like, all right, this guy is going to calm everyone. Like, do you see Drew Holiday, like, being a guy who podcasts more than he plays?
No.
Not at all. Drew Holiday was an adult in the room. Al Horford, do you see him being Mr. I Want to Be Famous doing a podcast? No. He was a leader in the locker room. Paul George is not that guy. That's not why they brought him in there. They brought him in there because they couldn't get Jack on the open market. And I think the fact that they did this in their own division is infuriating. Let's go to Tim on line four. Mm-hmm. Tim, what's happening, man? How you doing?
Gentlemen.
Hey.
Horrible trade. Horrible. The thing is, you know what? We went backwards, man. Honestly. We had a good team. I was hoping for a guy, and I heard the first breaking news yesterday about the big, and I'm thinking, all right, a Dennis Rodman guy. Great athlete. Good at the rim. And defender. But now we're going to be like the Red Sox for the next 3 years because of what happened. George is just degressed, man. It's horrible. We had a good team. It's gone.
Yeah, but Tim, JB had bad metrics. So
I guess so.
The numbers are bad.
I guess so.
There is, there's one way to quantify if this team did get better or worse. And they have slipped in the odds to win the championship. There's one Eastern Conference team that has jumped them, and that is the Knicks.
Well, so the Knicks are so happy. They're thrilled.
Knicks now are the best odds out of the East. It's still the Spurs and Thunder, top two, to win the whole thing. But then the Celtics are behind the Knicks, but the Celtics are still in front of the Heat and the Sixers when it comes to odds to win the championship next year.
I want to play this Gary Washburn clip here because Gary Washburn is not taking this well, as are a lot of writers. I think more than anything, they're just confused as to and maybe they're – maybe they're pissed like me because, as I said, if your basketball reasons for getting rid of Jaylen Brown was the justification and you said, all right, you know, we think it's a better team without him, at least you got to get some value for him. That's where they blew it. Like, you got nothing for this guy. He was, what, sixth in the voting for MVP this year? And you get Paul effing George at 36 years old and a bunch of picks that don't mean anything? Like, that, to me, is the sin. You could say that they should have kept Jaylen Brown around, and I'd agree with you. I'd say, yeah, if they didn't get Giannis, keep him around. Sure. Matter of fact, yesterday I was kind of excited I was like, Mitchell Robinson? Yeah,
it looked like it was a win now move.
Yeah, this was cool. All right, you know what? I don't think that they're a sure thing, but my God, they're going to put up a good fight.
Yeah, I agreed.
And then they get rid of Jaylen Brown and bring in Paul George, and you're like, all right, well, this is as bad as it can be. Well, Jerry Washburn from the Boston Globe had this to say yesterday about it all.
What a disaster stretch for Brad Stevens, ending in a disaster of trading him to a freaking rival. Like, if you're going to trade him for Tyrese Maxey, okay. You know, an edge comb, okay, right? Get some worth value back. But this is ridiculous. I mean, this is absurd. Like, I'm going to love to see Brad's word salad in defending this deal.
Wow. That's pretty aggressive for Gary, man.
Nice job.
But everyone's saying it's ridiculous. It's this. But why? I mean, they've won a championship. Can you give me something more, I don't know, tangible than just this sucks? And
do you think Jaylen's a better player than Paul George?
Yes.
Okay, so but got worse.
I am open to the idea, though, that this team, it's addition by subtraction. Okay, that this team might be better without Jaylen Brown.
Do you know Paul George shoots a lot of threes? He averages 6 or 7 a game. Sometimes he'll shoot 12, 15. Mm-hmm. Is that a good idea?
That's why we're going to keep him on the bench a little bit.
Okay, he's not starting.
Conley in there.
He's making $56 million and not starting. Pritchard,
well, you know, again, it's so that they can trade the contract next year and to get under the apron. And
okay, so they're punting. It's almost a slingshot.
A little bit, yes.
I mean, come on,
slingshot in disguise.
With Tatum in his prime, you're going to take a gap year. This is just one. It's.
Just 1 year. One small year.
And you had Giannis. You had him, but you wouldn't offer him the third year.
That throws you off, too. I know, Ken. Okay, you went for Giannis, and instead of getting Giannis, this is your pivot?
That's correct. Like, I understand how you can say JB and JT are not working, and you want to change things. And that's why Giannis, I was all behind it. You and I was so excited. I thought it was a done deal. And then to find out they didn't get it, then it's like, well, wait a minute. Just take your time. Why rush into this? I don't understand why they were so hell-bent in the last 4 or 5 days to just get his ass out of here.
I just love that the Celtics benched the Giannis pursuit to protect Ugo Gonzalez and Baylor Shireman. And then we traded Jalen. So the plan is Shireman.
Well, now, Bill Simmons said Ugo was not the reason. We can play this.
All right. When we get back, there's all this behind-the-scenes stuff that keeps coming out, and we're learning more. And each time I learn something, it just makes me more convinced that this trade was awful. Like, it could have been prevented.
What about his plus minus?
Oh, God. The plus minus thing, I'm going to throw up.
0-1 to Contreras. He pops it up. It's going to end the ball game. Into the bright sun. Vivas is back on the outfield grass. He's there to make the play. Red Sox, what a disappointing end to this homestand and series. They'd won 5 in a row. And then from the fight onward, the Red Sox have their doors blown off by the Washington Nationals.
Well, if you thought that was bad, it's only the tip of the iceberg yesterday. Red Sox get their brains beat in. I've never lost a bet so quickly. Maybe like first bucket in an NBA game, I've never lost a bet so quickly. I bet the under hits on whoever the fat third baseman was there on the Nationals yesterday. Immediately hit a bomb off Peyton Tolley. The bet died on the vine. Red Sox get their brains beat in.
I thought you were going to have the Nerfy. No run first inning.
Nope. I would have lost two. And then later on in the day, the Celtics trade Jaylen Brown to the Sixers for Paul George, 2 firsts, 2 seconds, a.k.a. a pile of garbage. So for more on what went down yesterday, we welcome in Rob Bradford, WEEI, and Baseball Isn't Boring. You can check him out on the Odyssey app. He's brought to you by McFarland Energy, the heating, cooling, and bioheat delivery pros that Eastern Mass and all of Cape Cod depend on at McFarlandEnergy.com. Bradfo, how we doing?
Oh, it's a McFarland type of day. McFarland to you all. And I thought you were going to say, if you thought that was bad, .. Here's Rob Bradford. So, a couple of things, guys, to get out of the way real quick.
Yes.
Number one, a happy anniversary to my wife. So there you go.
Oh.
Number two, I've never heard Terp so fired up in my life.
He's fiery.
He was shot out of a cannon today. He's
ready to go.
I love that. 10 toes on the ground. He's digging in.
You're standing 10 toes down. Well,
Bradfo, at one point, you must have been a Cub reporter. You're now a grizzled veteran of the beat. But at one point, you were just a Cub reporter, which is where Terp was. And then at some point, you realized that, the team is going to try to spin you on something that you just can't possibly get behind.
Oh, like this being a basketball move.
And Terp is at that point.
So what, bad.
Did you have a move like that early on in your career where you're like, they're just full of crap and I'm not going to listen to them on everything?
Oh, yes. I mean, probably. There was this. It's been so long. I'm so old. I can't even remember. I mean, the one that jumps to mind is, well, you know, you go back was the Nomar trade, obviously. The Nomar trade was, what are they doing? What are you talking about? Like, what? This is, you got Orlando Cabrera and Doug McKavich.
Well, they were kind of right about that one, though.
They were absolutely right. And so, I know, there has been ones that you absolutely right about. And even in 2012, when they deal all those guys, you know, the Nick Punto trade, the Josh Beckett, Carl Crawford, Adrian Gonzalez just happened to be in as well. You're like, what are they doing? But they won the World Series the next year. I'm not saying that this is apples to apples, because as there's a reason Terp is so mad, because he's a smart guy. He's not buying into the whole analytical, like, it's nauseating seeing some of this stuff. Like, I test. Is the guy good? What did you get in back for him? Anyway, and the third thing is, we had a big announcement, a huge announcement for the Baseballs and Boring brand about an hour and a half ago. On September 2nd at Fenway, we are taking over Fenway Park. It's Baseballs and Boring night at Fenway Park.
Let's go.
Yeah. Oh,
hell yeah. Good for you. Good for you, Brad Foe.
Yeah. So,
no offense. You guys might be most of the people in attendance the way the Red Sox are going at that
no,
point.
No, no, no.
It was pretty sparse yesterday.
No.
But
yeah, but this is the opportunity for everyone, no matter what the record, just to celebrate the great game of baseball while seeing Joe Kelly potentially hit someone with 100-mile-an-hour a fastball with the first pitch.
I'm sold. That's easy to get behind.
Yeah. And also, check out the jerseys. I mean, they are, I say this with no bias at all, they are unbelievable.
Well, we're happy to model those on Jones and Keith. If we could get
results from begging for jerseys, it's you guys, so I know.
Well, that's Keith. So just real quick, before we dive in on the Red Sox, yeah, you're a Celtics fan. Your thoughts, your reaction to this trade?
Yeah, I think it's exact. I thought, you know, Adam, like, you nailed it.
Thank you.
I mean, really, you did.
I think Adam, surprised.
Yeah, no, I kind of am. But I do think that you hit the nail on the head. It's all the people who are tying themselves in the knots trying to figure it out. This is easy to figure out. It was a financial thing. There is no semblance of logic where you could say, well, that was a good trade for the basketball team for next year. Like, that wasn't there's nothing along those lines that you can do. The thing I hate, even when they were talking about, oh, they're asking for four draft picks, like, draft picks, like, what are we doing in the NBA? You can get a fine player after number 10, but really, come on. Like, you're looking for the next Jaylen Brown, and you needed the third pick in the draft to get the Jaylen Brown. You needed the third pick in the draft to get Jason Tatum. That's how the NBA usually works. So, yeah, it's I don't blame anybody like Terp for being mad about this, because you have in Boston, when you're so close to getting toward a championship, and then you have the rug pulled out from under you, like, that doesn't go over well here.
Feels like it just extended trunk their window massively. But anyway, to the Red Sox real quick.
Ooh.
Leaving yesterday, right? Brad, we were just talking about it. I found out about this trade walking over the David Ortiz Bridge. Right after watching the Red Sox conclude a 7-game series, homestand, 5-2. They were outscored by 18-3 in the final two games, though. So how do you chalk up that homestand?
Well, I think we might look back at this season and say the cliff, the official cliff, was the moment the helmet left Wilson Contreras' hand the other night. You go back to that time, they're up 1-0. They had the momentum from the night before. They had the momentum from the 4-game win streak. And I'm not saying that's the reason why, but if you look at from that time on, it's been exactly how it was before. Like, we had this brief respite because for the Yankees in the first game against the Nationals, but then it was the same old stuff. You can't hit, and you can't hit good pitching, and you lose games at Fenway, and that's exactly what happened. So I understand they have a ton of injuries. I mean, as much as we want to say roster doesn't work, they right now they're sitting here with a ton of injuries. Even with guys like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, who was actually part of the solution for a while, he gets hurt. Marcelo Meyer, we can't figure out what he is because he's hurt. You have all these things. Now you have Conley Early, and he's hurt. But still, it is what it is. It's a results business, and you're running out of time to show results.
Wilson Contreras is getting suspended, right?
Yeah.
How much? Yeah, how many games? What are we talking?
I don't know, man. Like, I mean, if we're gonna go back to the I don't know, I baseball's and boring's theme. Joe Kelly got what, 7-8 games? I'm gonna go with five games. Five games to Wilson, and he should serve it exactly like Joe did in the bleachers.
Is Cavalli going to get anything, do you think?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he does, because basically the next day, and he should have done this, by the way, it was a good move on his part and Paul Toboni of doing the mea culpa, of saying, yes, I said that word, I did the wrong thing, I'm not going to do it again. But once you open yourself up to admitting that you did that, then you probably should be suspended, even though you weren't thrown out of the game. So not to the level of Contreras' suspension, because he just obviously lost it on them. But yeah, after the admittance of what he did, yeah, I think so.
What are we looking at here with Connelly early? Is this going to be another one of these, they hope he's back quick, they think it's good news, and he's not? Like, what are you kind of gripping there?
Yeah, like, just don't say we think he'll be back at the end of the 10 days. I mean, like, we're still waiting.
It happened once this year. Sonny Gray.
It did happen once. And I remember, like, Garrett Crochet saying that, Roman Anthony saying that, all these guys saying that. Just don't say it. And an elbow, obviously, I don't care if it's good news for them that it doesn't show any tear or anything like that, but it's an elbow. You got to be careful. This is your future. And it yesterday was sort of a microcosm of another part of the problem of the building of this team, or the reliance of these young starters. You have Peyton Tolley, you have Connelly early, really, really good, part of the future. Absolutely hang on to them. But to think that they are going to go stem to stern here and carry your team as rookies, I don't think that's reasonable, as never has been reasonable. It's sort of like when they put all the eggs in the basket of Roman Anthony at the beginning of the year. Yeah, like, that could work, but they're first-year players. So, Terp, I think it's just, you just got to be really, really careful. I think they'll be really, really careful. But here's the thing. We said it before. This is the time. This is fork in the road time. This is, they can talk about how many games are left. And by the way, yes, as I tweeted out, mathematically eliminated from getting the best regular season record of all time.
I saw this.
Yeah. If they won 77 straight, they had a chance.
Well, when
no.
You lose by what I like to call a Jones and Keefe, that's 10-2. When you lose by that score, Bradfoe, there's probably a lot of downtime in the press box, well, so I can see where you did that.
Yeah, there is. And by the way, you were playing Will Fleming. I was listening to the broadcast. When they're talking about Cornholio in the eighth inning,
things have gone south quickly.
Oh, yeah, you know the game's
out. I'll have to circle back to that. On Peyton Tolley, yeah, I know it was hot yesterday. And his velocity goes down in all these starts. He hits a certain threshold. His velocity starts to drop. Obviously, he's a really high-end velocity guy early on in the games. Is it possible he's just a reliever? Like, they've done this before with other guys. They've done it with Bard. They've done it with Papelbon. They did it with Whitlock, where they try to make these guys starters, and it turns out they're just a reliever. Is it possible Peyton Tolley's a reliever?
Nah, you know, and I was going down that road in spring training, which is what add to the list of a million things I was wrong about in spring training, but, you know, it was still a good time. I think that he is a starter, and you look at that Yankee start as an example, and there's been other starts. There is no doubt about it. It seems like he empties the tank way, way too early. And I think that actually can be learned a little bit. Obviously, we know Peyton Tolley's mentality, his personality, all of that. And that's not making an excuse. That's just a reality. So I do think that, like, probably he is a starter. Like, he has to learn to reel in a little bit, pitch to contact a little bit more, do what he did against the Yankees. So I don't begrudge you for bringing it up, because, again, I was that guy a few months ago, but I do think he's a starter.
This kind of conversation was different earlier in the week, riding a 5-game win streak, but now 6.5 games back of the wild card. Where do they have to be come the All-Star break to at least even consider buying back in? That conversation was easier earlier in the week after they swept the Yankees and they're riding a 5-game win streak. It's kind of back to square one now. Where would they have to be to even think about it?
I want to turn this around on you, Terp.
Yes.
All right? Because you were in the press box yesterday.
I was.
I mean, you are an insider in multiple sports. What do you say? And I'm going to tell you if you're right or
wrong.
Two
games.
I said three.
Okay. I'll say 2.5. I was actually going to say 3. I think one of the striking things about that 5-game win streak was they won 5 in a row, and they made up one game, right? They lose one game, and they lose half. Like, that's how this works. And we've seen it. Now they've lost 2, and they've lost a game and a half. Like, to think that you're going to be – you legitimately have to go on more than a 5-game win streak. You have to go on an ultimate heater. And as good as that was against the Yankees, they still have to show that they are able to do that a couple times here. And like you said, time's running out to actually do it. So if you aren't able to get to that 2 or 3, there's no question about it. And what's going to be, like, sad, if they are there – I would say, absolutely, I don't care what the blowback is, trade Chapman, trade Sonny Gray. Like, absolutely. Because you have pieces that you have to find in terms of bats in the middle of the order, potential bats in the middle of the order. A guy like you traded away in James Tibbs. You got to go get those guys. And there is absolutely no guarantee that Sonny Gray and Aroldis Chapman is going to help you win next year.
Okay. Brad Fogle, good stuff.
Yay.
All right.
Yay, baseball.
Check them out. Baseball Isn't Boring on the Odyssey app and WEEI.com.
Listeners, I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore, where people tell interesting stories about their family history, and then we investigate the truth behind them. Family Lore is available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Ah. I love hearing when Will's in a good mood. It was so rare for so long. It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich certainly, Ken Laird, Teddy J, 3-time Super Bowl champion, and I can call him our good friend now. I think when you talk to us at least 5 times, that's when you cross over into good friend territory.
I
our
agree.
Good friend and Sox manager Chad Tracy is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good. And by John Sewer and Drain Clean, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Chad, you swept the Yankees and you added another win last night. And all 5 wins at Fenway Park, which is a place that has apparently cursed you all season. How do you explain what's happened this past week?
Oh, man, I don't know. I think it's mostly, came home after, I mean, really it started on the road. We got let some games get away from us on the road that we felt like we should have had, but the offense started to show up, and I think the Yankees being in here, it kind of maybe made our guys feel like it's time to go now or never. And we had a heck of a week, heck of a series against them. And like you said, got a win yesterday, but we are at the moment, we're getting outstanding starting pitching. The bullpen's been pretty good here and the offense has showed up and we're taking consistent at bats.
Well, let's jump right into the crazy moment that happened last night. So Contreras hits a 3-run bomb. The emotions of everything that are happening in his home country of Venezuela obviously made him very emotional. It overpowers him. He's poised to have a great night. And then at his next at bat, he struck out, close call, and was walking towards the dugout, tapped his helmet as if to say, check the ABS system, and then the softest ump in the game threw him out. I'll say it, you don't have to say it. Later on, the umpire was asked, I don't know if you heard this, if like tapping the helmet for a non-challenge is an automatic ejection, and he said yes, it was, but also noted that there is discretion with the call, which to me says that it is an automatic. First of all, did you know that rule, and what did you think of how everything went down?
I was somewhat aware of the rule in the sense that I think it was something told, with the introduction of challenge and things like that, that if that players use those signals in sarcasm or anything like that, that they could be subject to ejection. So I think most people knew that. I think the discretion part of it for me is wherein lies, maybe my issue with it is just nobody in the stadium really knew what happened, even including myself. When he was removed from the game and somebody in the dugout told me, and I said, who? I thought somebody had said something from the dugout, like a player that was on the bench. And so obviously went out there and figured out what was going on. I don't think Wilson knew he was thrown out of the game. But for me, the discretion part is that. It's like if something occurs 2 steps from the dugout where nobody sees it, nobody's paying attention to him, now they're already focused on the next hitter, that's where I would have liked to have seen the discretion part come in. But obviously that's Nick's call, Nick's decision to do that.
Chad, how do you see the personality of the team evolving? And is Wilson becoming sort of your emotional captain, your emotional leader?
He's not becoming our emotional captain. He is our emotional captain. Like, he is pretty much since the outset, you know, like the you guys know that. You've seen it. You've watched the games. Like, the emotion with which he plays and the intensity with which he plays. And when he gets a big hit and you see his reaction, he's fired up, buddy. And it fires the rest of the group up. So, and you hear him hollering in the dugout, like he gets after it. He's a highly emotional player, and guys feed off of it. So I think there's no question he's the emotional leader of our team.
Chad, I'd say in the last seven games, there's been an uptick in offense and in hitting. So yeah. You guys are almost averaging more than close to a run more a game in the last seven games than you were prior. What do you contribute to that to, or any explanation for that?
Well, I think a combination of things. One, we're hitting some more balls out of the ballpark. That helps. We had three or four there in the last couple of games in Colorado. We've hit some balls out of the ballpark during the course of this week. And we've done a better job executing. We've had a lot of opportunities with men on third base, and we've got those jobs done. We did it two more times last night. I went a lot of attention on the first inning with the home runs, but the additional tack-on runs were runners at third, sac fly situations, and we executed and got the job done and didn't strike out. So probably a combination of factors. When you start to get some home runs and extra base hits, that obviously helps. But executing the small ball parts of the game helps as well.
How about Caleb Durbin? The minute he saw our guy Lorenzo, the batting coach, all of a sudden he's popped seven big ones, I think. I think he's honestly had seven home runs since he saw the batting coach Lorenzo.
He's swinging the bat great. He's swinging the bat great, and has been, and it's like not like a blip, like, hey, this is a good 10 days. It's been over a month now. Kansas City, I think, I think was in Kansas City in the office. We had talked one of our initial conversations. He was struggling at that point and had a conversation with him. At that time, if you remember, Kiner Falefa was hot.
Yep.
And a conversation occurred with Durb saying, hey, you may have to spend a little time on the bench here. Like, you know, you're struggling, and this guy's hot, and it's the responsibility of the team. We got to try things, right? And he spent maybe 7 out of 10 days or something of that nature on the bench. In the meantime, was working hard. I know there's a lot of attention on the outside hitting, but the diligent work he was putting in here too, like with our guys, spent a lot. He utilized the time like a pro, and just said, I got to get my stuff right. Worked very hard at it. Had a nice day at the end of Kansas City, there's one there. We sat some more, and I think he saw it like, when I get my opportunity back here, I got to run with it. And he has been fantastic.
All right. So, Chad, there was a report that came out that I wanted to ask you about. Sean McAdam, who's a good reporter, he published a report about Marcelo Meyer that some in the organization, I'm going to quote him, some in the organization were, quote, would question his mental toughness and his tendency to withdraw during slumps, as well as his willingness to play through pain. And then the day after those comments were published, Marcelo went on the IL. What do you make of Sean McAdam's report and what's going on with Marcelo right now?
Well, I mean, the willingness to play through pain is tough to swallow when he just did it for about a month and a half, you know? So until you finally figure out, hey, that's not a fracture, right? It's a stress reaction. But yeah, it pretty much acknowledges he was playing through pain. I honestly think, guys, like, some of that stuff, it's an easy target at times because, Marcelo went through a lot of stuff in the minor leagues. You guys know that as he came up, that there were some injuries and a lot of them were not preventable, you know, with a back issue and different things that popped up that were very real things. So it can become an easy target when things happen to bring up soft or to bring up won't play through this or won't play through that. And I think in a lot of cases, it's just been unlucky. It's simple as that. He's had some serious things pop up that nobody can prevent. And I don't share that sentiment, but I really think it's a case of that.
Chad, if Wilson is the emotional leader, is Anthony Siegler trying to get involved? He seems like he's developing a personality.
Yeah.
He's pairing up with him nicely, isn't he? Yeah. There's a lot of emotion there too. It's good. I saw some of that in Worcester when he first got there. Another guy plays the game high energy, very emphatic with his fist pumps and all that. He loves playing baseball. It's easy to see guys like that when you can see the emotion come out and you feel like these guys really enjoy playing baseball. But he is absolutely giving us a lift as well.
So, Chad, we had a caller call in yesterday, and he was fairly passionate about Jaren Duran. And by the way, he's not the only one. There's a lot of people calling about him.
And, you know, obviously he's someone who has been playing better, but at the same time, he has a pretty big track record now of getting into altercations, verbal altercations, with people in the stands, whether it be fans, you know, saying one thing or the next, and sometimes people don't even know what they said. You know, there was obviously just the other day, you know, there was the thing he did with Michael Holly on social media. I know that at Target Field versus the Twins back in April, he had one, and there's, of course, some other ones in his past. Have you spoken to him about that? Because it that can't be a... I know the fans don't like seeing that, obviously. Have you spoken to him about his emotions and how that can possibly backfire on somebody, like when you continue? Because as I said, this isn't one or two. This is a pretty decent amount of times that he's been jawing to the fans.
Yeah, first of all, the one the other day, and Jaron made comments after, and people were saying, oh, he just won't say anything. You know, when he said nothing happened. That's fairly true, just to be honest with you. I don't know if anybody, you don't have video of it, but like there was a fan behind us that was pretty, you know, pretty, I guess, excessively taunting over the course of multiple innings, just taunting. And you could see by look on the, on his face that it was in with the intent of trying to invoke a reaction, which by the way, I have very limited, that's ridiculous. If you're going to come to a baseball game, come enjoy a baseball game. But to deliberately be, as a grown person, taunting players, trying to evoke a reaction, I find that to be nonsense as well.
But, Chad, you got to be able to take that as a – I mean, if it's not personal, if it's like – because what we heard is that he was just yelling out his batting average or something. That's the report. I don't know if it's true. But don't you think that you kind of got to be able to take that if you're a professional athlete? It's not fun, I'm sure. But yelling back at the fan seems like an overreaction.
And that's the part where I'll cut in there, because it wasn't just Jaron. And actually, because there was a handful of us that had been listening to it, there was a handful of us at the simultaneous moment that looked at our security and said, can we please get this guy out of here? Because we don't have to sit. You can move him to somewhere else, but we don't have to sit there and listen to that. So I understand where you guys are coming from. I really do. I think it's easy to find these moments, and he has moments. Jaron's another one. We're talking a lot about Siegler and Wilson, right? And they play the game with a lot of emotion and intensity. Jaron plays the game with a lot of heart, emotion, and intensity. And obviously, you know, he has at times has a penchant to snap a little bit. But in that case, like we had him down in the dugout, and a lot of the conversation going back and forth between the security and the fan was some of the coaches saying, can we please identify that person, get him away here? We don't need any of that right now at this part of the game. So, I've had Jaron, to get back to your original question, I've known Jaron since 2022. I've had him for as long as anybody in this organization. I've had been around him as long as anybody that's in here. And I know that the kind of emotion that he plays with. And I'm there to support him and make sure that if I'm able to kind of get him pulled down from something, that I can do that. But I also don't want to take away the emotion with which he plays the game.
Well, what was the fan saying that you thought justified getting kicked out?
I don't want to get into that. I said that the other day to the media in here. I don't want to get into it. It was 3 days ago now. And my biggest thing was we got Jaron down in the dugout, and I think I got a lot of attention for Jaron. I was like, there was a lot more conversating going on between Flo and myself and the security than there was Jaron with that fan.
I guess as the only reason I'm asking, and I don't mean to continue to press, but as a fan, you want to know where the line is, because if it's just – because one of the great things about going to a game is razzing people on the other team. And I know it was a game at Fenway, so it seems odd. But, you know, I've always thought, like, the guy who's, like, the good ball buster in the crowd is always kind of funny as long as they don't cross that line. And I feel we know where the line is. Can you just at least kind of paint a picture of, like, was he over the line? Was it something personal that he was saying?
I'm not going to get into more details about it. I honestly would like to move past it because I think it's getting a lot more attention than it needs to. And it's our job to... It's our job as staff, and Wilson was there, it's our job as staff to prevent things from getting out of hand, which is what we did. And it was like done, and we move on, and we go out there and win the game. So I don't want to keep getting into it.
All right. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was real quick. Chad, I'm just curious. You passed the halfway mark. You're 9 games under 500, 4 games out of the wild card. It sounds like you guys are having fun and kind of the best run you've had all season. How are you talking to the players? I mean, how are you keeping them engaged and in it? What is your message to the players right now with this 5-game win streak, considering where you are in the standings?
I think That's an easy one. Well, first of all, they're feeling it themselves. You can feel the difference when the club's winning, and you can feel it when you're executing offensively and you're executing on the mound. So you just keep identifying. You go into a hitter's meeting, for example, we go through the start or whatever, and you get to the end of it and just, you know, just talk to them about you guys are, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing A, you're doing B, you're C, you're supporting each other, you're fired up, the energy is good. And you just keep identifying the things that are happening right now that were not happening, let's call it 10 days, 2 weeks ago, yeah, and beyond. And keep helping them identify those things and feel like, all right, this is what it feels like when we're doing things right, and that's what it felt like when we were doing things wrong. And let's do everything in our power not to go back to feeling how we were when we were doing things not so well.
It's good that you can like have an example of doing good things, right? Where you sustained it, where you can say there's a difference. If it's all bad, then you have nothing to kind of play it off of.
Right.
So that makes,
right.
that makes a lot of
sense. Yeah, we had a lot of bad, and that's fair. We did. We had a lot of bad. We weren't, and we had some moments of good, but even when we did, it was like, you know, a couple games, and then you'd feel like it would go away, but like, and the same problems would resurface. So this stretch, and I said earlier, even dating back to the end of the road trip, maybe one of the longer stretches we have where we feel like, you know, everybody across the board is contributing and doing their job right now. Just do your job. That's it, right? And we're getting a long stretch of that now, and hopefully we can continue it through the break.
It's interesting, too, because Rob Bradford said this on the show, and I completely agree with him because I heard it as well. People are actually talking about the Red Sox now, and I know that sounds kind of – I don't mean to dismiss what it was beforehand, but it's almost like people are getting excited again. And I know it's five games, but when you sweep the Yankees and you do it – as dramatic as it was on Sunday night, and my God, that was a roller coaster. It just gets people back into it, and hopefully you guys will be able to ride that, and I hope the locker room feels it, and that kind of can carry them throughout these next several series.
Oh, they definitely feel it, believe me. That the Yankee series was something else for everybody, and it was a really, really good moment for, you know, Derb and just the guys that haven't been here. They're in their first season that probably, when you think about the way the year's gone, that most of the season has been feeling, you know, disappointment and feeling the stadium booing or whatever. And to give them a glimpse of like, this is what it feels like when you start to reel them back in, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's what makes Fenway special, makes the Boston fans special. Like even when they've endured 3 months of struggles and now this is happening, it's like, you can feel them. It's like, that's all it took. And they're like, let's go. If this is how we're going to play. So, and to the first part of what you said, like, but it's now our responsibility to continue that, you know? So like, you're right. It's been five games and that's as long a stretch as we've had all year. You know, it's our responsibility, to have to carry that because five games, like we have been talking about before for us, like we're in a position where it's like, this has to continue for an extended period of time. That doesn't mean you have to go 27-0. You got to win more than you lose, and you got to do it for an extended period of time. And the guys know that, but we have some traction now, so hopefully we can carry it over.
And the kids are finally eating free at the 99. You guys are winning some games. I love
Radio
it.
Coach.
All right, Chad, great stuff, and congratulations on this streak. And as I said, let's keep it going. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're going to try. Thanks,
awesome, right, Chad. Thanks for coming on. That is Sox right. manager Chad Tracy.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.